Bowman Gray School of Medicine Oral History Interview Number 19 with Dr. Lucille W. Taft, interviewed by Dr. Donald M. Hayes, Associate Dean for Community Health Sciences at the Medical School. Dr. Hugh Taft, the first woman to hold the rank of full professor at Bowman Gray, served here from 1943 until her retirement in 1972. During her years of services, Dr. Hugh Taft was a member of the Department of Preventive Medicine, directed the Section on Preventive Medicine until 1970, headed the school's Student Health Services, and directed the Hematology Laboratories. Her special interest in research and treatment was blood coagulation diseases, particularly hemophilia. The interview is being conducted in the television studio of the Department of Audiovisual Resources on June 10, 1976, at 2 p.m.
Okay, I think, Lucy, I believe what would be best for us to do would be to kind of establish the framework from which you're speaking, which we can do by looking at the pictures of some of the people that you related to over the years and getting some recall of the events that surround your relationships with them. And then maybe you and I together could go back to 50 when I started school and 51 when the Department of Preventive Medicine started and sort of trace from that for them the sequence of development of the present Department of Community Medicine.
Well, that'd be fun.
So, first of all, I guess you can recall from looking at this picture, which I can identify a very young Clyde Hardy.
That's right.
And a very young Bob Lawson, I guess.
Yes.
And a very young Nash Herndon.
That's right.
Around a beer keg with these other three. Is that
George Harrell?
And
I can't recall him. He's a house officer.
Yeah.
And this is another house officer in OB. Hall, his name was.
And that was, do you think that was about the time that you came or shortly before then?
It was about the time that I came. I came in 1943.
Mm-hmm.
For two reasons, or three reasons, I guess. One was I wanted to move back south, and the second was Dr. Harrison was here. I knew he was here. And the third was that the resident in medicine at the time was a man I had interned with at Baltimore City, so I came down to see if I could get a job, and I did. And
So you came as a resident in 43, huh?
Well, we were known as assistant residents in those days. We had a very grave hierarchy. You were intern, and you were either rotating or straight, and then the next year you were assistant resident, and you remained assistant resident until you got the chief resident's job.
Did you do that?
Yes.
In what year were you the chief resident?
In 1945, for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I wouldn't take it any longer than that. You remember, this was in wartime.
Well, yeah, that's right.
And what happened was that we were required to cut down on the number of house officers. And what Dr. Harrison did was to try to get assistant residents rather than taking interns. And he used students as interns, fourth-year students as interns.
Mm-hmm.
So the assistant resident had to supervise the interns. And the more women and the more assistant residents he could get, the better he liked it.
Because
so
that was not going to leave him overloaded at the other end, I guess.
That's right. He said he'd rather have, I thought that was rather sensible, he said he'd rather have somebody with 2 or 3 years experience rather than try to get a new intern.
Yeah.
And the fourth year students turned out to be good interns.
Mm-hmm. So you did that and you finished then in 45?
My residency, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Was this fella here someone you encountered during that time or afterwards?
No, this is Arthur Grohman, who was here with Dr. Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't remember, but we had the school was only partially built at that time, or at least the outer edges were all right, but the Department of Internal Medicine was really one great big room that was cut and segmented in movable divisions, and in one corner was the department's offices, which ran down one side of the building, and back in the far corner was Dr. Grohmann's labs, which were full of all of these big jars.
Weird-looking.
He was working on hake oil as an antihypertensive. And these were the very early days of antihypertensive therapy. And one of the things Dr. Harrison used to do, we worked so hard that he used to invite us out to his house very fairly frequently, about once every 6 weeks or so during that time. And we always had a real good time, a big bash. And we didn't have more than 9 or 10 house officers anyway. And Arthur would come, and he'd sometimes would invite us out. And,
did he produce the refreshments, or was that out of his antihypertensive medication?
Yes, he had a concoction that he made in his labs along with the hake oil, oil, which was called, which we call Kickapoo Joy juice, which is tasteless and odorless and cheap.
Absolutely lethal.
And very effective.
Now, he's made quite a name for himself since that time. Is he still at Southwestern?
He was the last I heard, but I'm not sure.
He may have retired by now.
I think he may have died. It seems to me I heard that he died.
I know he became quite prominent in the field of
hypertension. I saw him in Atlantic City once, and he was used to have the reputation for being a rather sloppily dressed person, but when I saw him in Atlantic City, he really was quite dapper.
I see. Well, maybe he underwent some changes then. Now, this must be your house officer group here, is
that's
it?
That's right. That's all of the house officers, surgical as well, I believe.
6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21 total house officers, huh?
Yes, these are surgical residents here, and that's Hall, who's an OB, and Bowman, surgery, and Molyneux.
So that's, and now we have something the order of 190, I think. So it's
yes, I was fond
come
of saying
quite
that
a bit.
Two assistant residents and two student interns did all the work that 9 house officers did on Third West.
Well, they do change, but
they
that's a pretty wet behind the ears looking group. Those characteristics don't change, I guess. They always look young when you look back.
We didn't think we were so young then.
No,
we
I'm
thought
sure.
we were pretty responsible.
Now, here's a man that you've had some experiences with over the years. That looks like Nash Herndon.
Yes, indeed.
What were the circumstances under which you knew and met him?
Well, when I came, Nash was in charge of the outpatient department. And he and Cliff Grady had been here for, they were the first two house officers here when the school started.
Oh, the very first one?
Yes.
I see.
And Nash was in charge of the outpatient, and Cliff did some work in the outpatient, too. And I believe they were the first house officers.
How about
that?
It
might have been somebody else in surgery, but I don't recall.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll
Beef O'Neill was a surgeon.
Right, and we'll get back to him later because, of course, he was in the pioneer group that started the Department of Preventive Medicine with you, I guess, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, now here's a picture that looks fairly familiar to you, I guess, doesn't it?
One of my
you want to guess what year that was?
No,
that looks
I don't.
Fairly young, doesn't it?
I guess that was 1950 or so. I don't know.
I see. Well, here's another person.
That's Catherine Anderson.
Right. And Katie just retired this past year, so that you and she must have shared some experiences related to the school along.
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, we knew each other a couple of years before we came here. She had a friend who interned at Baltimore City when I did, and she visited this friend, and that's how Katie and I got to know each other.
I was not aware of that.
And then when she went on to Vanderbilt from Cornell. She went on to Vanderbilt in pediatrics, and I was casting around for some place to go that was away from the Northeast and got a fellowship at Vanderbilt in medicine, so we happened to go to the same places, and that's how our friendship started.
I see. So
then I came on, and then she finished and came over to look for a place to practice, and as I say, it was wartime then, and Dr. Butler gave her a room in his office. And I was still a house officer at that time.
So you were here when she came
Yes, just
that.
A few more months.
I wasn't aware of that time sequence.
Yeah.
Okay, and then here's another one of that group. She must have, Betty Conrad, she must have come along a little later, did she?
Yes, she did. She graduated during wartime and had her pediatric training, and I think she must have come along several years after that.
Okay, now here's
a group that
looks pretty serious.
I can't figure out what that was about.
Well, it seems to me that was related to the blood bank or the blood mobile or something, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, this is Chinese Elrod.
This is,
that's right.
Dr. Elrod, Dr. Carpenter, and you, and who is that, a local?
He's probably one of the men in town, one of the businessmen in town who was in charge of the blood Red Cross blood bank. This is Dr. Elrod, that's right.
Yeah. Were you sort of instrumental in setting up the blood bank here?
No, I wasn't. I was on the executive committee, local executive committee for the Red Cross, as far as the blood bank was concerned. If you remember, this had already been started by the Red Cross and nationally because we were in wartime. And well, even in, we were in Korean War by this time, I guess.
So this was a carryover.
And then after the war was over, this is where the Red Cross really got into this blood collection business, which was a pretty much of a natural thing. And then we served as advisors to them in the local areas.
So that's a thing that that is still thriving because I gave them a pint of blood just a week or so ago, and I know they're still in business that you were involved with. Now, here's a man who is another one of the early preventive medicine group, Manson Meads. How did you and Manson meet?
Well, I imagine that Manson's first impressions of me were terrible because what had happened was that I was doing the clinical laboratory teaching in 46, 45, and 46, and then I had an opportunity to go to Detroit for a year and take some advanced work in hematology. And Manson was I left in October, I think, and Manson was to take my place as a teacher. So I spent a good many weeks outlining what I had done and why I had done it and where, how blood slides was. I made all my own collection of blood slides, which spend hours in a non-air-conditioned room doing things like that. And I had it all lined up and told somebody in the Department of Medicine's office where it was and showed them where it was, carefully labeled and everything. And then I went on off, and then Manson came along, and within something like 4 days, he was precipitated into this course, and nobody told him where all this was.
Where anything was.
And he never found out, and I'm sure that his first introduction to me was something awful.
He didn't think kindly of you then.
Well, he had by the time I got back a year or so later, he had recovered and made his own place in this world, and his wife was helping teach too.
The hematology.
Then we picked it up again, and Hing and I taught clinical laboratory methods together.
Right. And you were still doing a little of that even when I came along.
Yes, I was doing teaching clinical laboratory methods in hematology, and I was doing all the hematology.
Uh-huh.
One person could do all the hematology in those days.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
It was a pretty...
This looks like some of the girls in the medical technology group.
Yes.
Were you involved in that program?
Yes. I was in charge of the laboratory in the pathology, the hematology laboratory. And I had to do with them, and then we also had some lectures to give them in their courses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that... not only the medical students got to know who you were, some of the others did, too.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's a young lady that you met along the
Catherine
line,
Davis,
too.
It's Catherine Davis.
Right.
The most unflappable person.
Still is.
Yeah, still is. Very good.
Okay. Whoops. Well,
I don't remember that picture of you.
That was pretty callow, too, doesn't it? That's when, about the time
I'd
when
say
I
say you were highly motivated. You look like a good Christian boy.
Right.
That's, what,
I look like
that's all we ever took.
Really all set to stamp out disease and
that's
pestilence.
Right.
That was 1950.
Yep.
And then here's another
young
fellow.
Here's Earl Watts, who's
who came along a couple of years after that.
Equally affable and always in command of himself.
Right. Now known by the students as Earl the Pearl.
That's great. That's
okay, and there's one James Chappell, who is somebody we'll refer back to also. But you knew him before he came
to
school.
Yes, I knew him even before he went to college because of my friendship with his aunt, Catherine Anderson.
Okay, and then Charlie Spur.
A classmate of mine in medical school, Charlie Spur, who was really... dropped back into our class because he took a year out in a special project in pathology. He was a great chemist even then. And one of the fellows we used to, Crad, I was used to go almost every week to the movies together.
I see. I think he came along in the Department of Medicine and sort of strengthened them at about the time when you were busy trying to get preventive medicine built up. And here's one of the two of you together, Charlie and you. And then
Harold Goodman came.
Joe Goodman, right, who came along.
And he came and it was a year, and then went back to Michigan State. And then when we had an opportunity to hire somebody new, I said, get him back. Get him back.
He was here as a fellow, postdoc?
Yes, he was he was on a special grant. He was working with Nash on a special grant. I can't remember the source of it anyway.
Yeah.
And then he went back to Lansing for a couple of years.
Well, certainly you were instrumental in...
I hope so.
getting him back, too. So you're not only, you've been responsible for helping us attract some of the people we've still got, in addition to the things that you did.
I feel proud to have been instrumental in that.
And these are all some that you know.
Yes.
Here's Dr. Janeway, who came along just shortly before you left, I guess, didn't he?
Yes. He was in neurology first, and then became dean.
So you didn't really work here with him as the dean at all, did you?
No. Manson was it.
Okay. Now, here are some pictures of more recent vintage. It looks to me like, that one's not maybe as recent, because I don't remember when you had a cast on your arm. When was that?
Oh, that's when I fell up the stairs. That was about 10 years ago.
I see.
I caught my little finger on the door jamb.
Okay. Well, I was looking at some of these over here where you and I were teaching together.
Yes. I think this came along at the time. You see there?
I guess so, right. I must have just forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, maybe we could...
In fact, I've had each hand bandage.
Right.
It was when I cut this hand, and I couldn't...
And this one over here looks like the day somebody told you that it was going to be all right for you to retire or something, because you had the biggest smile. But these last ones really sort of wrap it up as far as, you know, yours and my association. And I recall my recollection of our early association was when you were a teacher and I was a student. And all I remember was that I thought you were a terribly forbidding person at the time, until the day you told us about the epidemic of illness due to smoke, air pollution in Donora, Pennsylvania. Right. And I figured that anybody who could tell a story like that and make me remember it must have something on the ball, because I still remember the story.
Oh, really?
So that maybe was when you sort of kindled my interest in preventive medicine, and that was in the early days of that department. Maybe for purposes of this record, it would be a good idea now if you could sort of... recall what you can about how the Department of Preventive Medicine started off, because it was not one of the original departments in the medical school.
No, it wasn't. There had been an Institute of Tropical Medicine, which had been established because of Dr. Mackey's being here, and supposedly, I thought it was going to be a Department of Preventive Medicine also, but it never got around to that, and then Dr. Mackey left, and his staff left, and I had expressed some dissatisfaction with my situation.
Your situation then, being in medicine,
in medicine
or
in
practice?
In medicine, in medicine, and also running this lab. It was pretty rough, and I couldn't see how it was going to last too much longer, and I wanted to know what was going to happen. And so I just stopped for 6 months to think about what I would do, and to prove, I suppose, to myself that I could. And during that time, they got a started on an idea of preventive medicine, and they asked Dr. Meats to be chairman of the department, and asked Nash and me to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down and made plans for the department before it ever came into being. And we had some discussions for about 4 or 5 months before we ever made a department of preventive medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose this was the only time that I ever heard of a department planning that it would be a department before it even got started.
Yeah.
But I think this was a very interesting thing. We did several things that were fun. We didn't divide up the responsibility very much the first year. And we all attended all of the classes that we had. And we criticized each other about our lecturing.
Mm-hmm.
We made up the examinations together. And we tried to keep in the front of all of our teachings what we were trying to do. We really wrote objectives.
That must have been... you were still doing that when I had the class. That must have been...
That's right.
When, 50 or 51?
51.
Mm-hmm.
51.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget one very interesting incident. One of the students, we always would have a day when they would give back the results of the exam questions. And we gave objective questions, but we went through them all and we had a lot of argument. We let the students argue. And I remember there was a series of true and false ones, and there was one question that when Manson was reading it, he said, "That's false." And Nash and I both were sitting in front of him, and he said, "That's true." So the teachers started arguing right there. Well, ordinarily we had gone over those things, but this time we missed. Well, after we had quite an argument right in front of the students and went on and finished the exam, and the students got out and finished their arguments too. As we were going toward the elevator, there was one fellow and he was waiting for the elevator. He said, "Just as I thought, nobody knew what he was doing all along." So we said, "Well, thank you for your opinion." And I think that was true. We did go off in all different directions. We had a good time doing
that. Well, maybe the having the candor to admit that in front of the students was kind of a culture shock to them, because, as I recall, not many people did that at that time.
I think the thing that attracted me and really gave me a new sense of usefulness was the way we did work this out. Everybody, I felt part of it, and everybody else felt a part of it. And we would argue and wonder about how it could be done better. I must say that I don't think we were accepted very well by the students.
Mm-hmm.
This is community, the course in preventive medicine being all about what the community was about, and the students are being unaware that that's of any value from where they sit. But we kept trying to find new ways of doing things. and trying to interest, because I think we were all convinced that, this was important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you pointed out some years ago now that if we know this is a value, but we just don't know how to teach it so they realize it's a value.
Right.
And maybe they're still having trouble with it.
Well, yeah, that's one of those things that that may never change.
That's right. There are a few things that don't.
Right.
But that was always fun to me. I felt part of the department. Mm-hmm. I felt it, that what happened, that I had a very definite contribution to make in terms of what happened, what
uh-huh.
didn't happen.
Uh-huh. Well, now, from that time, how did that department evolve for a while over the next few years? I do remember when I was a student and you were teaching that you brought in a very refreshing lady from Chapel Hill named Ethel Nash for one of our sessions,
yes.
And she had quite an impact on all of us.
Yes. The way that happened was very funny, because Dr. Janet Mackey, before she left, she was in our department for a little while. She came back and was in our department for a little while before she went to Washington permanently. And in the course of a conversation, one day she said to me, and I think also to Manson, there's a woman over in Chapel Hill whom you ought to know. And then sometime later, when Manson was overseas, when he was in Thailand, the 2 years service he did over there, we had Ethel over here once. On the strength of that, we asked her to come over, and she come and spend 2 hours on a Saturday morning, I remember. And upset everybody,
mm-hmm.
But intrigued them. Mm-hmm. That was one class we had no trouble getting attendance. Although we had a lot of objections to some of it, and that was...
This was because she was talking about marriage and human sexuality.
That's
and
right.
those things.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
Didn't couch, just said what she had to say in mm-hmm. very down, straightforward language. Nothing,
right.
just to say it openly was shocking.
It certainly was. I recall that very well.
And that's that. Then Ethel came over once a year for several years. Then when Manson, well, I guess it was about 3 or 4. Then when Manson got back, in addition to that, we learned to invite people in who had special knowledge and know-how in certain mm-hmm. fields like industrial medicine.
Yeah.
And then we used to invite the epidemiologists when we talked about venereal disease.
Right, I remember you had Mac Gaskey come
yes.
in industrial medicine.
Yes, and well, we had the man from Chapel Hill, and then we had...
Jake Kuhlman came in
and
sometimes.
Jake, yes, and then Dr. Ellen Winston, who was a Department of Commissioner of Public Welfare in the state. In addition to that, I would go and see her, for example, every year and find out what new things they were.
Mm-hmm.
All of these were efforts to show that there was a connection between what the doctor did and the community, and that if he learned, most places had a welfare department and a health department, and if he could get in touch with them, he could find out whatever else was available. So our object was to try to find ways to support the patient, hoping that the medical students, when they went into a town, would use the facilities which mm-hmm. and the services which were offered to them. So this is what we tried to do. And this it was a constant challenge, because even so, this was not very acceptable to the students. So often these people would come and have very nice handouts all made for them. They either a copy of their speech or some of the important things they thought, or references or whatnot. Well, the students would often just take the handouts or get Joe Blow to get them 6 handouts until I pointed out that you never got to know a personality from a handout, and that we had picked these people, and I think we did, because of the not because of only what they knew, but
right.
their own dedication.
Their personal charisma.
You can remember that.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of the name of the fella from Washington who came down and talked about venereal disease. Warfield Garson. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
he was a charismatic sort
yes,
of a fella.
Yes, very.
And very.
And a fascinating individual
yeah.
who seemed to have very clear ideas about what was needed to make medicine and the community go together as far as health care was concerned.
Right. He was probably one of the ones that, in addition to you and Manson and Nash, who had some impact on me that
mm-hmm.
that I can specifically recall.
Well, that's interesting.
And I said, I remember you were talking about Denora, and I remember Manson talking about Rammelkamp and his studies on the epidemiology of streptococcal infections. And I could just almost repeat everything he said word for word because he was so dynamic in the way he presented it. But
yes.
he obviously had an impact, and it was an important impact.